we got him on.
Much for joining us. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, and as always, we are wishing you the best of health and happiness and enlightenment in terms of how to best care for yourself, yourselves, and your family the natural way. And I've been on a very, very busy lecture schedule the last few weeks. You can find out more of how you can join with us by going to naturalnurse.com, and along the top, just click on calendar. We have all our up-and-coming events listed there. We just did presentations at Hippocrates Health Institute and also the Life Extension Center, and those are in Florida. And also the Florida Herbal Conference, just got back from that. What a wonderful event. If any of you are interested in herbal medicine, you may think about joining in. We're also having the American Herbalist Guild Conference, and that's coming up in October in Georgia, and lots of other online events. The online events are often 1 or 2 hour online classes that grant CE broker credit. That means if you are a professional, as a nurse, massage therapist, licensed acupuncturist, registered dietitian, or nutritionist, you get CE broker credits towards your requirement of continuing education in terms of maintaining your license. And if you don't have that, you just get a certification for having taken the class. So either way, it's a great way to join in with us, either on ground or online. And I would love to introduce my guest for today, and that is Robert Goldman, Psych.D and JD. Lots of degrees and knowledge. His topic is going to be managing depression, anxiety, and stress, an integrated medical and health approach. Dr. Goldman is a licensed psychologist as well as an attorney who has been specializing in helping patients cope with the ordinary and extraordinary stressors in life. He has worked as a supervising psychologist for several years, and throughout his years of experience, he has learned how toxic stress can be to your entire body and how important it is to teach others about resiliency. Dr. Goldman believes that it is important to work collaboratively with the medical and social systems to prevent and treat neurological and mental conditions. As an attorney, Dr. Goldman has argued for better access and education to those in need of mental health services. He has also worked with many families in their respective school districts to ensure that their children get the educational services that they need. Dr. Goldman is also an adjunct professor at Hofstra University and St. Joseph's College. He has conducted research in the area of autism and in the treatment of delinquency. He is the co-chair of the Neuroscience and the Law Committee, and his other professional affiliations include the American Psychological Association, the Suffolk County Bar Association, and the American Bar Association. He also works with the CIIT Center, and that is right in Plainview, New York, and is an integrative health and healing center that you can visit if you're in the local area. So we're very, very happy to bring on board as our guest today Dr. Robert Goldman. Welcome, Robert.
Hello.
Yes, you're there. Well, you sound loud and clear, so thank you for speaking with us today.
No problem. You can hear me okay?
Yes, we hear you perfectly. Now, let's go back in time a little bit, because what led you on this interesting journey in terms of what came first, the attorney or the psychologist?
I was an attorney first for over 10 years, and I noticed, like, a lot of lawyers weren't happy. I noticed there was a lot of stress within the legal profession, and I also had my own frustration with the legal process in that I was a criminal defense attorney. And I felt that, you know, as lawyers, we're called counselors, but I didn't really feel we were doing much counseling. We were getting good results for our clients, but not really helping them heal from their crime and focus on prevention. I also wound up doing a lot of family court law, where I was appointed to be a law guardian, or nowadays they call it attorney for the child. And I found that when they would ask me to make a recommendation in the best interest of the child, I realized that what does a lawyer know about the best interest of the child? So that's when I decided to go back to school got my doctorate in psychology, and then sort of had a epiphany. Well, now you went to school for that. How are you going to, you know, integrate both? And that's when I wound up being fortunate enough to be hired by Suffolk County, New York, to be a supervising psychologist, both in probation and also in the jail. So I took somewhat of a circuitous route to becoming a psychologist, but I have no regrets about being a lawyer, because I realized that the adversarial mindset trickles down to how everybody lives their lives, and how that is so unhealthy for us from a biological, psychological, and neurological perspective.
Well, I'll tell you, I live in Florida, and you've probably heard about Parkland at this point.
Sure.
And yes. Where I live, Deerfield Beach, is actually like the next street is Parkland. So I'm right in the midst of all the things that occurred. And, of course, many people are well aware of that. But it sounds like exactly your background speaks to these kinds of occurrences.
It does, because the same issues in Florida are going on in New York, and that is we wait too long to respond to anything. We wait for crisis management to act, as opposed to prevention. And, you know, there's been a lot of talk about the warning signs that this troubled individual had. And each time something as tragic as this happens becomes an opportunity to become a teachable moment. But we meet these things with an adversarial mindset, where we look to blame and not be accountable for what happened, and try to transform it into a teachable moment so innocent lives are not continued to be lost. But because we don't know how to talk to each other in times of conflict, we lose that opportunity, and the cycle perpetuates itself.
Right, and then I think there's the practical issue of funding. Like you say, there's a lot of, you know, hysteria and hoopla and grandiose words about addressing these kinds of social issues that affect everyone's lives. But then when it comes right down to creating a funding pool to actually support those individuals who need this but cannot afford to pay for it on their own, that seems to be drying up.
Well, that's true. And you know, when they closed the jails throughout the country, they had all said that when they closed the psychiatric hospitals, they said that all the monies that they saved from closure of mental health hospitals was going to be used to reinvest and focus on mental health prevention. But that never really happened, and it all went back into the coffers and was never really focused on. So what you have now is children and adults who have mental health histories but were never properly treated, lack of access to those resources. Also, there's a big pipeline from school to prison where schools handle discipline in a very punitive way, so that they're seeking to throw the kid out. And that becomes a reward for a child who is disenfranchised with a school. And then what happens is the child winds up, you know, continuing to act out and feel good that he doesn't have to go to school since he's been thrown out. And then eventually he finds his behavior gets him into jail. So that's a big issue that I have been talking about for a long time, and it always falls on deaf ears. It's like we get a tragedy, we talk about it, but we do nothing about it, and then until it rears its ugly head again, and we wait.
Right, that's on a societal level, but
it's on a systemic level. That's right. We wait.
Yeah, we see that over and over again. That's true. Yeah. Now, one of your real focuses, let's talk for a minute and we'll come back and talk about it again. Let's talk about your involvement with the CIIT Center. What does CIIT stand for, and what is your role at the center?
Well, the CIIT stands for the Center for Integrated and Innovative Therapies. I believe you had Dr. Michael Gudatoria, who I work well with, and work with not only him, but a neuropsychiatrist, Dr. James Halper, Dr. Munir Imam, who is an internist. And what's really unique about this place is that we treat everyone integratively. So there's always different components to somebody's, could be mental health, it could be their primary mental health, it could be even a chronic physical illness where, you know, people suffering with chronic illness need to have a certain mindset to be able to cope with whatever ails them. So when I had worked as a supervising psychologist in the jail, that was my recent employee before I came on board, and this experience has opened up my eyes to really what we need to deal with in terms of focusing on helping people from a mental health perspective, and that is not rely on just our knowledge, but to use an integrative and innovative approach like Dr. Mike has taught me about the importance of nutrition in mental health. And the APA just put out a whole article about the brain-gut connection, the biome, and how that affects your moods. What I love about my job is that I learn something every day from the medical professions or professionals that I have to collaborate with, because they look at mental health or anything from their perspective. And I think that gives us a real great ability to attack whatever is ailing you from a collaborative approach, as opposed to having our own biases in the way we treat someone.
It does make so much sense, and I guess that's what reflects on the word holistic. It means treating the whole person from all the different aspects that are going on with them, rather than what we see in the conventional medical model, which, of course, can certainly be useful, especially in an emergency. But really, for instance, I went with a client to a rheumatologist because they had arthritis, and they were having very severe stomach issues. And they actually came out and said, I will only talk about if you have joint pain. If you have stomach issues, go to the gastroenterologist, even though the stomach issues are completely related to the pharmaceutical drugs that are being prescribed for the arthritis. What a disconnect.
There's a total disconnect. And it's really unfortunate, because that's how people slip through the cracks. And you know, my own mom had ovarian cancer, and they treated it as if it was gastrointestinal until later on it became what it was really was the her stomach was responding to the inflammation caused by the cancer. So, you know, they were treating her from one perspective and not considering all options. And I think you hit the nail on the head where we can't be so closed-minded.
And that's why it's wonderful to work in an integrative center like you're doing. And it's really great to hear you say, from your perspective as an individual and as a professional, relating the fact that you moved from being not happy with your profession as being an attorney and now being very happy with your profession because you're able to help people where you felt frustrated by not helping people before, even though you might have been compensated even better, who knows?
You're right. I was. Life. I mean, I felt, you know, like sometimes I kick myself when I meet somebody and I hear how much money they paid their criminal defense attorney, and I say to myself, well, you could be doing the same. Why'd you do this? So the thought does enter my mind, but you have to be passionate about what you're doing in order to make a real difference, and I am.
And you can hear that. That's certainly very evident, and they're very lucky to have you, and your patients are lucky to have you there. Now, a big thing in today's society is many different kinds of, let's say, severe mental health, but then there's things that are less severe but more widely experienced, like anxiety. Why do you think anxiety is becoming such a huge epidemic? Almost everyone has experienced it.
I think because, you know, there's a great book by Dr. Robert Sapolsky. He's a Stanford professor, and he wrote a real interesting book about why zebras don't get ulcers. And his argument is that we are in a state of toxic stress. You know, it's evolutionary how we deal with our stress and our anxiety. When an animal feels threatened, you know, with the brain, the limbic system kicks in, and then all our hormones do the same. So we are in that hypervigilant state where we're worried about really our survival. That's what it was based on. But now our survival is more tied to our reputation, how many likes we get on Facebook, how many, you know, Instagram follows or streaks can we continue. I'm learning this through my kids, but we are hypervigilant now about protecting our reputation. And I think our reputation in our own minds is constantly being attacked. So this state of chronic stress, there is, you know, zebras either escape or they get eaten. For us, we're always in the chase, and it is depleting to our entire body to feel that way, to worry about the next shoe to drop. It's just a mindset that I think our society has taken on. And, you know, when I went to law school, a lot of professions, not just being a lawyer, but a lot of professions, people are trained on the worst-case scenarios to anticipate the worst, or we read cases about where tragic consequences have happened. Statistically, they're very rare, but our mind focuses on the worst-case scenario, in part because we're taught to learn that, and also because we want to focus on the bad so we can prevent that from happening. But that's just not a good way at this point that it translates to how we live our lives. But we are in a chronic state of stress because I think we're wired to do so, and our environment in which we live in induces that type of mindset.
That's true. And beyond mindset, like you shared, Dr. Goldman, it translates into physical reactions in the body, like excessive release of cortisol, when that isn't
correct.
Supposed to be there in a sustained way.
Right. And the cortisol, and Sapolsky talks all about this, is about how too much, you know, chronic cortisol can really deplete your entire body and destroy your organs and all those things. So, you know, anxiety can be healthy if it motivates you to change. It's sort of a spectrum, though. When it comes to the point where it paralyzes you and you're in a state of continuous stress and then continuous anxiety and then followed by depression, you're really paralyzed. And I see that becoming a very common occurrence in both adults and children.
Yeah, unfortunately, right? With children, because you would hope that it wouldn't be happening with ones who are so young, but it certainly is. And
we see
a lot of the societal as well as the individual effects. Well, we're going to take a break right here, Dr. Goldman, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion. We are speaking today with Dr. Robert Goldman, licensed psychologist as well as an attorney, very knowledgeable gentleman, and he is on staff at the CIIT Center. That's in Plainview, New York. So anyone who is nearby, you certainly probably want to go in there and take a visit, have some blood tests done. You'll meet Dr. Goldman. You'll meet Dr. Mike, who we had on the show about a week ago. Also, all of these shows are on the archive at naturalnurse.com and at Progressive Radio Network right here on Progressive Radio Network. So if you're hearing something you want to share with others, you can go ahead and let them know that even if they missed today, they can still catch the show. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll take a look at the soybean, its phytochemistry, and its role as a food and medicine.
It is exciting to see a resurgence in research by universities and food scientists on the role that foods play in disease prevention. Many of these institutions, such as the United Soybean Board, the American Soybean Farmers Association, and the National Cancer Institute, are busy developing designer foods, or superfoods, concentrating the essential nutrients and phytochemicals in soybeans and other foods that have potent medicinal effects. Commonly known foods which have soy in them include soy milk, a cheese-like substance called tofu, tempeh, a fermented soy protein, and tamari, a fermented soy sauce. The soybean is a rich source of many nutrients, including selenium, zinc, beta-carotene, vitamins A, C, and E, and 20 of the 22 amino acids. Soy also contains essential fatty acids.
Research on soy foods is vast and well known to health enthusiasts, although the general public and physicians in the United States may not be aware of this plethora of research. In Japan and China, however, this is not the case, as a voluminous number of scientific studies have been carried out in animals and humans. Chinese studies reveal that soy products can increase the ability, rate of activity, and number of white blood cells. Patients receiving chemotherapy and radiation can benefit from drinking soy milk, which in several studies demonstrated a protective effect on the liver and gastrointestinal system.
It is interesting to note that the British journal Lancet revealed that vegetarians and Asians who ingest high amounts of soy have the lowest rates of cancer. This is due to one of soy's constituents called genistein. This chemical is a phytoestrogen or plant estrogen, which can decrease and block the uptake of human estrogen and testosterone, as well as enhance its excretion. Like the drug tamoxifen, it competes with estrogen for uptake in the reproductive tissues. By doing so, hormone-dependent cancers like ovarian, breast, and prostate cancers may be prevented.
In conditions where there is a deficiency of hormones, such as osteoporosis and menopause, soy isoflavones, such as genistein, can weakly mimic estrogen and reduce the severity of these problems.
So, listeners, don't count out the versatile soybean. Make it a delicious and nutritious part of your natural medicine chest.
Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we are wishing you the best. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear comments and also what kind of topics would you like to hear. We've been doing this show since 1980. That's 1980. And I've been doing natural medicine since 1964. That's with a six, a very long time. And always more and more excited about it all the time, because those things that were traditionally believed, especially by indigenous cultures all over the world, which includes folk healers, medicine men and women, advisors from all different kinds of tribal as well as European cultures, and all of them really had an amazing amount of knowledge. But what's interesting now is that as we delve into scientific investigation, we so often discover not only that it does work and they were right all along, but we're beginning to uncover the mechanisms of action of how it works. And to me, that whole thing is exciting, everything from the cultural knowledge to the scientific validation. So with that in mind, we're talking with our guest, Dr. Robert Goldman, who is a licensed psychologist and an attorney who's been specializing in helping patients cope with ordinary and extraordinary stressors in life. And he is now part of the CIIT Center, and you can Google that or visit our show description and just click on it and find out the address and how to get there and how to get involved. So thank you so much for being our guest today, Dr. Goldman.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now,
the address is 131 Sunnyside Boulevard in Plainview.
Okay, and I was there, just so our listeners know, because I very often, whenever possible, interact with whatever guests I have on the show beforehand so that I can have an understanding of what's going on. And I did also work, Dr. Goldman, I don't know if you knew Dr. Serafina Corsello, but she had a similar center for many, many years. And I was her head nurse for 23 years. And we had a center in Manhattan and also in Huntington, New York. And I'll say Dr. Corsello of blessed memory, because she's no longer, you know, with us on this side. But nonetheless, it was an absolutely phenomenal experience, because I'm sure you're seeing that too at the CIIT Center. As a health provider, which you are, as a psychotherapist, you actually see people get better.
Yes, absolutely.
That's one of the best things.
I love it. I love every day I come to work and with the excitement of learning and helping. All the things we have here, neurofeedback, transcranial magnetic stimulation, other forms of biofeedback, as well as hyperbaric. We have so much going on here. The IV suite, all of it is, you know, something that I was not aware of until I came here.
So you were using and still use, I'm sure you still use, regular psychotherapy where you're talking with someone, right? That would be one technique.
Yeah, I mean, sure, we do. You know, I was raised traditionally in terms of using CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, but I have to say that I continue to do that, but continue to push and learn more things that are evidence-based as well, such as mindfulness, meditation, acceptance commitment therapy. I try my best to be current with as many different things that are going on in the field of psychology, but at the same time, looking at promising practices and trying to become educated on those as well, because I want to be the best psychologist I can be to help my patients.
Well, that's admirable. So if someone comes to the center, how do they get involved with you, or is everyone sort of exposed to many of these different therapeutic interventions?
Well, we like to really have our patients oriented about what the center is about. So ideally, they would have an interaction pretty much with everyone on staff. Typically, though, they could go to Dr. Mike first. What I find very interesting with Dr. Mike is when he looks at depression and anxiety, he's looking to does a complete blood workup, urine and stool, to really understand from a biochemical what's going on with the person that may be causing their anxiety. This is a very, you know, this to me is real cutting edge and blew my mind away. Something that obviously when I worked at the jails, we didn't have this type of concept, but it's part of the holistic approach. And I, Dr. Mike will do the biochemical piece. I'll do the psychological piece. I'll give them a standardized personality test, which will give us results and examine how they're thinking. Then we may do a neurological piece, which we will measure through a brain map, where we look at the brain in terms of see its neurological firings to make sure it's performing optimally. And then we get a really great picture of that patient from a complete picture, and that's where we develop what's called an individualized treatment plan that is uniquely tailored to meet the needs of that individual.
And that is, you know, that's so in-depth because it's not going to be exactly the same therapy for everybody.
No, it isn't. I mean, depression and anxiety are just symptoms, and we part of the quest for us is to get to the why. You know, somebody, there's a famous story of a guy named Phineas Gage, who was in the 1800s. Basically, what happened to him was a spike went through his eye and affected his personality. He changed so much. And not surprisingly, even though he survived the injury, his brain and his personality was altered because of the changes in his brain. So we might have diagnosed that as anxiety, depression now, but we need to really get to the heart of the matter to really not just treat the symptom, but to focus on the why and then develop a treatment plan.
Right. That's big, you know, even in naturopathic medicine where they talk about tole causum, find the cause. And that's quite a different focus than we see in conventional medicine where it's more about stop the symptom and don't worry about the cause.
That's right. It's very important.
Now, you have many years of experience with people who, you know, are less fortunate and probably are not coming to the CIIT Center, and that would be those people who are already incarcerated, because I know that that was a very, you know, intense focus, so you learn a lot from that experience as well.
Right. You know, and what I learned more from the individuals that I served in the jail than anything else, because I look at them from a resilience perspective, because many of them have tragic backgrounds in their lives. And but for my situation being blessed with certain opportunities, I would probably be in a similar situation that they are. But some of them, despite all their tragedy, are able to survive and thrive. And I'm like, if we could just bottle this, if we could really understand the roots of resiliency, then we're really working on prevention. And that's how I was trained, to focus on prevention of mental illness as opposed to crisis management.
So what are some of the specific things that you would do to try to stop what they call recidivism, which means people were in jail and they get out maybe because their time limit is up, and then they, you know, I think they sometimes, people I know personally, really were not comfortable living on the street. In addition, once you have something flagging you, then you don't get a job or an apartment.
Right, right.
So then what do you have? What can you do besides, you know, you have to eat?
I think one of the biggest problems with the legal system in general is that we shield the personal consequences that that person's actions had upon the individual. So that's not limited to incarceration, but it's also with respect to the plea bargain process. So, for example, somebody will take a plea in a courtroom, and once they're done, they shake the attorney's hand, and they go, great job, but can you tell me just what happened in there? So there's no personal investment, and there's no understanding as to, exploring the why. The same way the medical profession doesn't focus on the why, the criminal system doesn't either. We just look to, punish the person and not focus into, well, why did you act that way in the first place? So I'm a big proponent of the concept of restorative justice, which is really holding that person accountable, making them, developing competency for that individual so that they have a skill set when they leave the system. And at the same time, they apologize to the victim and they make amends for what they have done. So when I would work in the jail and I would just, for my own edification, I would ask the person, so what are you going to do to repair the harm that you caused in your community? Or are you planning to meet the victim and apologize to them? Because when you have to face your victim, that's true accountability. And that's true learning for how your actions affected that individual. And that, to me, is real strength. But just hiding up in a jail and not being held accountable, you don't learn. There's no opportunity to learn. And people look at me and say, I'm not apologizing to my victim. I don't have a victim, first of all, and I moved on. I don't think that victim's going to want to hear from me. So I've teamed up with individuals who have, the unique ability to forgive. And I don't think the victim necessarily has to forgive the individual, but we know from a medical and psychological perspective that forgiveness helps a person with their healing. So I have witnessed and teamed up with a friend of mine who videotaped meeting her brother's killer in jail, and she filmed the documentary. It's called A Final Gift. And it's really amazing to focus on how that person is talking, how they're both talking to each other, and the level of forgiveness by saying, I will not allow your actions to control me. And that's how I define forgiveness, because we have a saying, victims become victimizers. So many of the people in jail are victims who have now become victimizers. It's a cycle of violence because there's no lesson about the benefits of forgiveness. It's considered weakness. So I'm fascinated by that as a psychologist and even as a lawyer about the ability that people have to forgive. I think we should really focus on that's resiliency and how is someone able to forgive? And again, the criminal justice system doesn't talk of this. When I went to law school, the concept of restorative justice was never even mentioned to me. I only found out about it after both of my disciplines collided, and I learned about it through that way.
So what did you call that? I don't know that term. Restorative justice?
Yeah, you're restoring the individual. Do you ever see the Les Mis?
I saw that play, Les Mis, yes.
So it's all about, that's a great example of restorative justice. I mean, that guy felt labeled as a number, and he was never able to, really get out of that stigma of the criminal justice system. The only time he was able to really move forward is when the priest forgave him, if you remember, for stealing the all of the things that he was taking from jail and actually gave it to him. So his actions inspired the character to really change and his life by learning about forgiveness. So I think it's really, we're missing that. I mean, so many people that suffer with chronic illness, also, it would be an interesting study to see if there's a correlation between those who suffer physically and those who have difficulty forgiving.
Well, yeah, that sounds like it makes sense. The example you gave of someone who was did the documentary in the case of murder, that is huge. What about, you know, when someone, like, stole something from you, which, you know, you're very wealthy and you want to have that thing, but it really didn't change your life in a very negative way not to have it. Couldn't we work on forgiveness in those kinds of situations as well? That might be less drastic.
Well, you'd be surprised, because it, for anyone, it's a violation to, you know, like when my car was broken into and something was taken, I wanted, if you asked me what I wanted to happen to that person, I wanted vengeance. So I don't think forgiveness is, obviously, I hope I've gotten better and I've learned, and but forgiveness does not come easy to us. So I don't even think it's necessary needs to be a crime of murder. And but at the same time, we have to really understand that restorative justice is victim focused. So not everyone's going to want to meet with their offender. Not everyone is going to have the ability or want to forgive, and that's okay. But I think whether or not you do something like this really depends upon the victim and the offender. It's a voluntary process. I know that I run a program that's in the courts right now where everyone who commits a crime, they are referred to me. If they are referred to me, I should say anyone who is, they, one of the outcomes of the program is that they read an apology letter in open court. So it becomes a transformative approach. The person is held accountable for their crime. They're given an opportunity. Restorative justice, we say, is about healing, you know, both physically, psychologically, and even from a biological perspective, being able to repair the harm that you cause to the community. Because when a crime occurs, it has a ripple effect, not just on the individual, but the community as a whole. And I think that that's the direction. You know, this, the concept of restorative justice, by the way, is not a new concept. It's old. It comes from the Bible, where you have to return to the person that you committed the crime and repair it. It's actually based on Native American culture, where they have what's called a peacemaking circle. It's been done in South Africa with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission after the apartheid. So we really need to focus on repairing the harm and holding the person accountable, but at the same time, not defining them as a horrible human being, not able to be accepted back into society. Because if we don't accept that individual back to society, then the likelihood of them reoffending becomes that much greater. And the one thing that the United States is great about is we're the number one incarcerator in the world relative to our population.
That is amazing, and thank you for that information, Dr. Goldman. Now, we're going to take a little break, one more break right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, so you can learn more about Progressive Radio Network and the wonderful shows that are here. And by the way, you can get the Progressive Radio Network app very easily. All you do is go to any of the app stores, and it's a free app. You just write in Progressive Radio Network, and it will pop up, and you can download it onto your phone. And we have had so many people all over the country and, of course, all over the world who now listen live. And by the way, if now is not the time for you live to listen to The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, you can listen anytime through the app as well as going to the online archives. So lots of ways to connect. We love to hear from you. And we're going to just take a short break, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion with our fascinating guest today, Dr. Robert Goldman, who is both a psyche and a JD. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
You're listening to PRN, number one for progressive minds.
Hi, everybody. I am Karen Hartglass, the host of It's All About Food. Join me every Tuesday from 4 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, or catch all of my shows in the archives. You can find my archive programs at the Progressive Radio Network website, or you can call my personal archive phone number to hear the most recent 5 episodes of It's All About Food. Here's the number: 1-701-719-0885. Here it is again: 1-701-719-0885. Learn about how we can solve many of the world's problems today and do it deliciously here on It's All About Food.
Tune in to The Living Well Show, which will air on Saturday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time on PRN, where we will offer the latest insights on natural health care, environmental issues, and all of the other circumstances that help us live well and be well. Join us. We are airing on Saturdays at 11:30 a.m. on PRN.
Let's go into the mountains. We'll leave it all behind.
Stay tuned to PRN.fm for more empowering ideas from Progressive Voices. We're moving forward, and we hope you're coming with us.
And welcome back to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you so much for joining us. And we are talking with Dr. Robert Goldman. He's also the co-chair of the Neuroscience and the Law Committee. And he also is on the American Psychological Association and the Suffolk County Bar Association. I bet there's not too many people who share those two associations with you, Dr. Goldman.
No, that's true. I mean, I do sometimes run into them, but we're a rare breed.
Yeah, that's pretty unique. But, you know, what a wide and expansive view of the different aspects of people, which really are very integrative, when we use that word integrative, as you've been explaining to us. Viewing somebody who has gotten in touch with, let's say, problems with the law through a lens of understanding psychology, it pretty much seems like everyone should be so trained.
I definitely think that at a graduate level, we should focus on an integrative model, and that everyone should be aware of different theories of anxiety and depression, not just from a psychological perspective, for example. And from a legal perspective, we should also look at, take educate a, you know, a collaborative approach as well, so that they're getting exposure to all types of philosophies.
Now, is there a particular person that you'd like to share, but obviously we wouldn't discuss their name, who perhaps came to the center and you could see that they actually got a lot better in terms of their relationship psychologically as well as physically, because it all fits together?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's many, but one that definitely comes to mind is a patient who really was diagnosed, I think, at the outset, wrongly with schizophrenia. But one of the things Dr. Mike did was run all of her blood work and put her on a specific nutrition plan that really helped her. And I noticed how that symptomatically improved her whole mindset with how she presented. And she went from being pretty much nonverbal to being able to engage in a very meaningful conversation, which obviously then that in turn helps with the therapeutic process, because now I can work with her and she's able to be more focused. So and then I see the connection where she sees that she's losing weight and she's feeling better about herself, which in turn is helping with her low self-esteem. So every day I see improvement with a lot of my patients. And what's great about it is it's not, you know, it's because I believe the integrative approach that we're taking on all ends to deal with the person's anxiety or depression or any mental health issue, I feel very comforted to know that I'm not on my own, that I have other medical health professionals, that we're working together to treat this person and can talk about it to really make them better and come up with different theories and treatments. So, you know, there's plenty of patients like that I'm seeing that are improving more than they would at any other place, in part because we are one team and focused on the same.
What do you mean by a term that you threw out? Maybe we'll go into that a little bit more deeply as we head towards the end of the show. It went so quickly. Cognitive behavioral therapy. What does that mean from a patient's perspective?
So cognitive behavioral therapy is, again, how I was trained, and what we are trying to do is the belief in cognitive behavioral therapy is that people have certain thoughts that lead to behaviors. And we look at those thoughts and where they come from and then try to dispute those thoughts if they are dysfunctional. So, for example, somebody who has generalized anxiety disorder suffers with the what-if syndrome. So people are constantly worrying about, well, what if that happens? And what if that, you know, always predicting the worst. That goes along with generalized anxiety disorder, where people are constantly worried and anxious about something bad that's going to happen to them. So what we try to do is, from a cognitive behavioral perspective, we look at those cognitions, the thought processes that are, you know, leading to the anxiety, and we dispute them. We ask them, where's the evidence that if you go outside, you're going to have a heart attack, or if you go outside, you're going to get cancer, or if you go to work, something bad is going to happen. So it's all about disputing the thoughts and then at the same time coming up with strategies such as relaxation, meditation, to help the person relax, come up with alternative thought processes that are much more healthier in terms of reality-based cognitive things, what's more likely to happen. When somebody struggles with any type of mental health issue, a lot of times they're stuck in a loop of a thought processes that is making them dysfunctional. So it's about, you know, really trying to dispute the thoughts. And the behavior hopefully will change, and that's what we try to do.
Well, I have this on my bumper sticker, which I also have sitting right in my living room table here, that I love. I think it should be shipped everywhere. Maybe the center can have them and give them out. It says, "If anything can go well, it will."
That's right. That's a great saying.
It is.
Yeah.
And it's a good mantra. You know, it's just as possible as everything going wrong.
Right.
So I like to think about that way. You know, actually looking. Of course, I've been accused of being a Pollyanna, so it's a perfect sticker for me.
Yeah, I mean, if I thought that being negative had any advantages, I would tell my patients to think that way. But there is no advantage. And again, getting back to the evolutionary perspective, at one time, you know, there is a thing called the worry gene, where it was beneficial to us. The ones who survived are the ones who anticipated the worst and didn't get eaten. But we have to realize that at one time that might have been helpful, but worrying constantly does not help anything.
Well, if there's something worrisome, what I do is I do take steps to prepare for it, and then I don't think about it anymore. Like, let's say living
right
here in Florida, there could be a hurricane. So therefore, I have food and water and candles, you know, supplied, and then that's it. You're not going to sit and worry about it all the time. So
exactly,
using that worry to do a little preparation to bring you to a point where you don't have to worry about it isn't terrible.
That's correct.
So that's
correct.
Wonderful that
worry,
you have that.
Worry is okay as long as it doesn't paralyze you as opposed to motivating you.
That's true. So what is the best path for people who want to find out more about the center and perhaps come in and get evaluated or become your patient? Is there a way to be just your patient, or do people always go through the entire program?
I think the best thing to do is call our center. The phone number is 516-243-8660. Make an appointment. If it's a psychological appointment or anxiety stress, typically the patient will be referred to me. If it's a biological problem, it will be sent to either our internist or Dr. Mike. And then we will discuss and treat that patient together. They're more than welcome to, if they just want to call up and set a tour, those tours are free, and they want to just be better educated about what we're about, they can call that same number. That's 516-243-8660. And again, we're at 131 Sunnyside Boulevard in Plainview, and they can do the same, and we'll be more than happy to meet with them.
Well, thank you so much for being our guest today. And listeners, I'll tell you, it's an exciting place. It's very large, and they have things there that you've never seen before. A lot of real old-fashioned, great traditional medicine, as well as cutting-edge influences, theories, focus, tests, and equipment. So you will have fun there for sure. So I want to thank you so much for joining us today right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Thank you, Dr. Goldman, and thank you, listeners. Until next time, this is Ellen Kamai, The Natural Nurse, hoping that you stay healthy.